Hello and welcome to the Potential Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ellen Jackson, and it's my mission to share the science of human behaviour in a practical, fun and inspiring way. In each podcast episode, I interview an expert from the fields of psychology, well-being, leadership, parenting or high performance. I pick their brain to uncover what they know about living well, what tips do they have for you and I, and I quiz them about how they apply their expertise in their own life. Join me as we discover simple, science-backed ways to live, learn, flourish, and fulfill your potential. Hello and welcome to the final episode of the Potential Psychology Podcast for 2020. We have made it to the end of the year, and what a year it has been. Congratulations to you for making it this far. It's been tough, hasn't it? Not all bad necessarily, and tougher for some than others. I think we have to acknowledge that. I think many of us feel a sense of gratitude and a sense of perspective that has been delivered by 2020, a sense that as difficult as it's been, we know that we're not alone in that and that some have suffered perhaps more than we have. And I certainly feel that way. I feel enormously thankful for what I have right now, exhausted, but thankful. And one of the things that I'm most thankful for is the people that I have around me, the people who have supported me and helped me and guided me and been patient with me and have sometimes, maybe often, picked up the slack for me and have always cheered me on. And that's what we are both celebrating and exploring in today's special episode of the show. Because it occurred to me that I've never really introduced you to the other members of the Potential Psychology team. You get to hear from me all the time, but you don't know the amazing people who do all of the behind-the-scenes work here, who help me to be the best that I can be. You've never heard from them. So because this year has taught us all how to be adaptable, and reminded us that just because we've always done things a certain way, we don't have to keep doing it that way. And because 2020 has been the year of kindness and community and connection, I'm sharing three very special people, Jay, Andy, and Tamsin, and their stories from 2020 from around the world with you. They are the Potential Psychology team, and let's get to know them a little bit. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to our audience. We are listening to a very different episode of the Potential Psychology Podcast today because I have with me four-fifths, well, including myself, it's four-fifths of the Potential Psychology team all gathered together virtually. At least we're not physically gathered together, which is one of the reasons why we're doing this, because we are all in very different geographic locations. But I thought this would be a great opportunity just to introduce the team to you, to learn a little bit about who everyone is, what we all do outside of what we do for Potential Psychology, because this is a wonderfully diverse, eclectic, skilled professional team who have all of these other wonderful things that happen in their lives on top of what they do here at PP. And to reflect a little on the year that has been 2020, because one of the wonderful things that I have been able to experience this year in 2020 is working with each of these other three individuals in different geographic locations and to learn a little bit about the experience of 2020, life in a global pandemic, running businesses in a global pandemic in different parts of the world. And I thought, you know, what a wonderful way to round out the year, but to be able to share some of that with everybody today. So I'm going to ask everybody here to introduce yourselves, tell us where you are and what you do with Potential Psychology, and then perhaps what you do outside of Potential Psychology. And I'm going to kick off with Jay. Jay, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Jay. I am the podcast producer for Potential Psychology. I am in Manila, Philippines, and it's 12 in the afternoon here.
Fantastic. And so can you just give us a little rundown, Jay, on some of the things that you do? You do manage the podcast, but you do lots of other bits and pieces as well that our audience would see and hear.
I do. I create some of the creative content for Potential Psychology, and I also do some of the social media work.
You absolutely do a lot of the social media work. You're underselling yourself there. And Jay, what else do you do professionally aside? Because you work here with us at PP, but you do lots of other bits and pieces too. What else do you do?
I do. I work for another company. It's a game design company called Storyweaver Games. And I do most of the creative writing for that as well.
And personally, you have had an interesting year, and I'm going to come back to this in a moment, but you also do a lot of work for your local community, don't you?
Yes, I do. I've been heavily involved in volunteer work since I started working. So one of my advocacies is work for women and children. So the most recent one, because we had a bout of typhoons, like one after the other, three in a row. So most of the communities are flooded and are staying in evacuation centers. So my friends and I are just getting donations and doing food packing and relief operations for, that's taken up most of my weekends actually for the past few weeks since the last week of October.
Yeah, and it's been something that we've been proudly able to support, some of the work that Jay's been doing.
Thank you so much to the team and Potential Psychology for supporting our volunteer work.
Well, look, it's thanks to you for all the work that you do, and being able to share that has been a privilege for us this year, because being able to have a diverse skill set and diverse professional and personal experience is something that we all value. So, you know, it's great to be able to share that. I really do appreciate that. So I'm going to come back to you, Jay, to learn a little bit about what COVID has been like in the Philippines. But I think I might turn to the lovely Tamsin. Tamsin, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Can you tell us a little bit about, you're a relative newcomer to the Potential Psychology team, having joined us in July of 2020. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what it is you do and where you are?
So I am South African, as you can hear from my accent, and I am in South Africa now, but I was living in Australia. So I'm very established. I've been living in Australia for 20 years, but it's amazing. You step out of Australia and then it collapses time. And my accent is like, everyone thinks I've always been in South Africa, but I set off with my family to, you know, work remotely and to become the quintessential digital nomad. And we left Australia and we did 7 days of transit from when we left Australia to come to South Africa, and COVID, that was right over COVID. So I can tell you more about that experience later. Mm. But I started working with you when I was in South Africa.
In July.
So I'm an online business manager. So I came in to support Ellen with basically growing her business in the online space. And we're working on some very exciting things, which I don't know if we can talk about yet, but I'm really just helping her to manage her team, to look at her social media marketing and basically operations of the business, streamlining, simplifying, and basically, yeah, getting projects done.
Mm. And what do you do when you're not doing that with me?
Well, Ellen is one of my clients. So I have a couple of other online business owners that I work with. And I'm actually putting together a course of my own, because one of the biggest joys of my work is actually working with virtual assistants. So I'm putting together a program for business owners on how to get started with hiring a virtual assistant, and then how to really get the most out of the relationship, because I think it is one of the most wonderful gifts, as you probably know, because you've been working with virtual assistants for ages, how amazing it is. And it's so much more than just someone doing admin tasks. You know, it's like, so I'm really passionate about that. And having visited the Philippines twice, I really love the people, and I love being a part of having an impact in their lives, as well as the Australian and US business owners' lives. And I just think it's such a great synergy. And it's one of my most favorite parts of my job, is actually working and leading and managing them. So yeah,
Fantastic. And that has played a big part in what you've done with me, but also, yes, some exciting new product development stuff that's going on behind the scenes that everyone will hear more about in the new year. Tamsin, I will come back to you to talk a little bit about COVID and 2020 in South Africa and perhaps expand upon that shift in perhaps what you thought life was going to look like this year compared to what it has. But Andy, you know what's very cool about having this conversation with Andy is that we've been working together now for close to 3 years. And I think this is the first time we've actually seen each other face to face. We've done everything via email. I'm not sure we've even had a phone conversation, have we? It's been a very, very digital relationship.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I don't think we have had any kind of phone contact. It's all been on email or social media.
Yep.
Absolutely. But yeah, great to talk face to face at last.
It is. It's wonderful. And so, Andy, tell everyone a little about what you do. I know most people who've listened to the podcast for a long time would probably have a good inkling as to what you do, but tell us a little more, please.
Yeah, I edit and mix the show. So once Ellen has finished with the actual interview, you will upload it to Google Drive. And then from there, it comes to me. I do a little bit of audio cleanup, getting rid of a bit of room echo and background noise and that sort of thing, and edit out all the ums and ahs and just tighten up any topics that need a little bit of a zhuzh. And mix it with the music and send it back to Ellen for publishing and going out to the listeners.
Absolutely. And I have to say, particularly early on, Andy has been an enormous support and guiding me and giving me some hints and tips and just being a really great supporter of me embarking on podcasting as a new adventure, which I took on at the ripe old age of 45 or something ridiculous like that. So that's made a huge difference having you in my corner as well as your enormous amount of experience in the audio field. So very exciting. And Andy, where are you based?
Yeah, I'm in Melbourne. I'm in Paran, which is probably about 3 train stops from the CBD, but it's the kind of suburb that you tend not to have to go to the CBD to get anything from because, it's a pretty bustling place.
A wonderfully eclectic spot, but as we will find out shortly, not the Paran this year that it ordinarily is.
No.
Before we get to that though, Andy, what do you do when you're not doing this for Potential Psychology? Because this is not the only thing you do.
Outside of this, most of my life these days is podcasts. I edit all yours and I have a number of other podcasters that I work with as well in a similar but not always identical capacity. Sometimes I actually go, when COVID permits, I'll go on site with my own record mobile studio and record people. Every single project is just tiny, slightly different, but I do mostly podcasting. I have done radio for a long time, but that pretty much dropped away just before COVID, actually, but most of it is podcasting and then a bit of voiceover as well.
Fantastic. And podcasting has been a huge growth area. In fact, it's been fascinating. I know there's been a couple of other people that you have worked with that I know who have kind of said to me, I'm thinking of doing a podcast, particularly in the mental health and wellbeing space. And, you know, how do I get started? And what do you do about editing and all of that? And I've said, yeah, contact Andy.
Yes, thank you heaps for that too. It's, as I'll touch on later, it's been really fantastic to work on podcasts in the psychology space just for my own mind.
Excellent. So 2020 has not been perhaps the year that any of us anticipated if we cast our mind back. And Jay, you're going to come into the story here because I remember back in, I think it was probably late January, mid to late January, and we had just been, my family and I had been effectively evacuated from bushfires. You know, we had the summer of fire as we were all here in Australia. Well, no, Jay wasn't, but you're very intimately involved with we Australians, so you knew all about it. And we'd just come back and I remember sitting and having one of our weekly catch-ups and we were talking about the high drama, not only of bushfires in Australia, but I believe there'd just been a volcanic eruption as well. Yes. In the Philippines.
Our call started like, well, it's the end of the world, as we know. It's burning down and volcanoes are erupting, but I feel fine. What a way to start the year.
It was, wasn't it? I know, yes. It literally did feel like the end of the world in some ways. And I remember that conversation so distinctly because one of the things you said was, and now we've got this coronavirus. And I'm like,
what's the coronavirus? I hadn't heard about it. And that would have been mid to late January. And of course, we all knew about the coronavirus in a matter of weeks. But yes, for you in the Philippines, was it that things had started to happen a little earlier, or are you just very much on the pulse? Can you remember back?
Well, January was when we had our first case. And it's a culture of paranoia here. So all of us are on high alert for a potential pandemic. And the rest of the country was in denial for a few weeks. And then February hit and everyone is starting to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. So in our part of the world, we have in March, mid-March actually, March 15, I remember, was when we started locking down. We have arguably the world's longest and strictest lockdown, lasting for more than, 16 weeks.
In total. And so what did lockdown look like for you? Oh, I know we've had conversations about this, but share it with the audience.
Lockdown here is pretty much like being in jail at home. There's no public transportation, so that's suspended. And malls are closed, businesses are closed. Everyone was advised to stay at home, even government workers and almost all of the public sector. That went on from half of March to the end of May, May 31. And we had another round in August. The second round was about trying to ease up the burden of our healthcare workers because we're at maximum cap. And so we had to do another round because the ERs are filling up.
And so for you, what were you actually able to get out and do or not do? What were you able to access? What were the rules for those people who were at home?
You can't go out without a quarantine pass. So you can only go out for supplies, essential supplies like groceries, medicine, and if you need to go to the hospital for checkups. But other than that, there's no mobility because you can't go anywhere. There's no public transportation. And if you do own a car, you have to get a special pass so that there are checkpoints situated in all over Metro Manila. So there's a QR code that you have to scan to get a pass. So otherwise, if it's not essential or if you're not doing a donation run, they won't let you through.
Okay, so you are literally just at home. You've been working from home, although that's not much of a change for you, is it?
No, it's not. No.
Jay works at home with currently 4 dogs, is that right?
Yes, I have a new puppy. She's a month and a few days old. 7 days old, 1 month and 7 days old.
Very cute.
So I now have 4 pets.
So you're in an apartment working from home with 4 dogs?
Yes. And one of them is the employee of the month because she doesn't bark. The rest of them just makes noise. And thankfully, not today.
So yes, that's how you get employee of the month in Jay's workplace, is just not bark. And Jay, what's been the biggest challenge for you this year with COVID, either personally or professionally?
Personally, because I like to reclaim my weekends, because I've been working from home for a decade now and weekends are my personal time. So you want to hang out with friends or family. And since mobility is an issue, you can't go anywhere or visit anyone and they won't want you to come to their homes as well. Mm-hmm. So the biggest challenge was making do with not being able to see people in person. So I had to adapt to that. And just eating out. I miss eating out. Because most of the time, the food experience here is interactive, like through ramen or the Korean samgyeopsal meals that you share with everybody and then you get to cook your own on a table, on a hot plate. That communal experience is what I miss because I love eating out.
So it's not the same for those of us who are used to just fetching our own meals in our own kitchen and sharing, you know, eating on our own or sharing with our family, which has been very much, I think I'm finding now that my children are allowed out of the house, that invariably we're missing one of them at any given time. So dinners can be quite small. So for you, that experience of actually it's eating is a social event. Yes.
It is a social event for me, yes, very much so.
So that's been difficult. And what's the situation now? Are you still in that hard lockdown? Have things alleviated a little?
We have what we call a modified community quarantine, where most of the businesses, around 75%, are able to operate, but not at maximum cap. So they can do 50 of the seatings or 75% of maximum seating, but not full. And indoor activities are, well, they suggest not to do that. So dining is al fresco, just mostly what you guys have, I think, in your own communities. We're just a little less stricter because back then we had no freedom to do anything at all.
And do you have the transport back?
Yes. Yes, we do.
So things are feeling a little easier.
Yes. It's kind of back to normal.
Back to some kind of normal. COVID normal, as we're calling it now.
Yes.
Thank you, Jay Tamsin.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about, because so you headed off with the family on what was going to be a big adventure and got as far as South Africa and then got stopped. Is that how it worked?
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, just hearing that moment of, I was in a coaching call and the head coach was saying, so yeah, COVID, don't worry, you know, it's like, don't worry, it's not going to affect your business. And I remember kind of feeling like, why are you even like talking about this? It's like not a thing. And that was probably like 10 days before we left. And yeah, as Jay said, the 15th of March was when the pandemic was declared and we were actually in transit from Sydney to South Africa. And we ended up getting into South Africa 8 hours before they closed the border.
In the nick of time.
It is, I mean, the synchronicity of, because we packed up and sold some of our stuff, put it in storage. And so if we had planned to leave a week later, we would have pretty much been in Australia with no home,
no stuff,
which wouldn't have been the end of the world. But also traveling through that period. I mean, I remember getting in the bus from the hire car to the airport. And that was that first really strange feeling of being too close to people. And, you know, because everyone was at the beginning, they were like, are you going to get a mask? And I was like, no, don't be silly. And then by the time we got to buy masks, we couldn't even buy a mask. They were all sold out. We couldn't buy hand sanitizer. So we, you know, that was us. So traveling during that time was very, very weird. And then staying in a hotel and we were the only people in the hotel, this huge hotel. And it was very eerie, all of that. But obviously then we arrived and, you know, we've been very happy and settled here. And it changed our plans, but it worked fine because I wasn't able to see any family and because all of my family's here and connecting with old friends, like some people I still haven't seen because it's still a little strange, but we've settled and we're happy and we've been doing little trips around Cape Town. And so it's different because, you know, our plans of, I mean, I've got a 3.5-year-old, so it wasn't like we were going to be backpacking. And also I've got a full-time business, but the idea would be to, you know, we wanted to go to Spain and we wanted to, you know, spend 3 months here and 3 months there. And anyway, it's all good. So that was our beginning and our change. But it's been fine.
You sound very, I mean, I know you because I've got to know you now, that you are a very positive, optimistic person by nature. But there must have been, or there must be, a bit of adjustment that's had to go on in terms of, you know, imagining what 2020 and maybe beyond was going to look like. And then knowing that, you know, obviously you have been able to settle and it's fortunate that you are there where your family are, but not being able to do those things that you'd hoped to do and perhaps not knowing when you can either, because we don't know when international travel is going to kind of be back to any kind of semblance of normal.
Yeah, I think, I mean, in some ways I feel like me and my husband we're kind of like primed for this, because with all of the uncertainty that was going on, you know, having been minimalizing our lives in some way. So our life has become more and more simplified through the last few years. Just, I don't even know why, but to be here and to have the flexibility that we're not heavily invested anywhere. So if we needed to suddenly go back to Australia, we can. If Australia, I mean, God forbid something, you know, uncertain happened there, we've just got the flexibility to be safe and to move around. So that I think has been a real blessing. And I'm not that attached to plans just generally. I think I just feel so grateful every day. And when, you know, like me not spending like some fancy pants, it kind of makes it sound silly, you know, 3 months in Spain. I mean, it sounds like a great idea, but when there's so much change going on in the world now, you know, that's really irrelevant. And, you know, we are very self-sufficient, our little family. And it is one of the things that I strive to be, which is create happiness and create meaning wherever it is. So it was an adjustment, and there were dark times, but it's more not dark times for myself, more dark times for the planet and what's going on and how we are going to recreate, because I don't think we're going back. And I don't even know if we want to go back. Personally, it's been, you know, not too much of a hardship. As I said, you know, my little boy's birthday party, I get sad a little bit because I thought it was going to be a big party with all my family and all my old, you know, school friends and their kids. And it wasn't. It ended up my dad and my stepmom coming to our home. So it was just, and it was the first time I think I'd seen my stepmother. Oh, I'd seen her once just at the airport, but then otherwise I hadn't seen her that whole time. So there were, you know, there are those little moments that we won't have back, but he's a 3-year-old. I worry, you know, I feel more sorry for the 18-year-olds that are missing these milestones and the, you know, the year 12 kids that have just missed their whole, yeah.
So a wonderful attitude of gratitude in there around what you do have rather than focusing on what you don't. And what's the situation been like in South Africa? I mean, we all get caught up, I think, in our own little local bubble and forget about the fact that this is something that is affecting the entirety of the world in so many different ways. What's the situation been in South Africa or certainly around Cape Town?
We went into lockdown, I think, about 10 days after we got here. And it was also quite a hard lockdown. And I think in some ways it was a blessing that it was, because it was the most extreme, I think, at that time. So we weren't allowed to go out. We would like to go just to the shops and back. We were actually stopped in a roadblock because we were going to a chemist on the other side of town and we weren't allowed to. We had to go to the local chemist. So we had to have a big excuse to kind of get through. But so that was about 2 months or 3 months. And we were only allowed to exercise for an hour, 2 hours a day, which was crazy because it was the middle of winter and it was 6 a.m. So it was pitch dark. And the irony was everyone was on the road at the same time, which was crazy because we were all passing backwards and forwards. So that was the lockdown. But I think the pressure, the economic pressure in South Africa, you know, was very foreboding or you know, like looming because the balance between the humanitarian crisis, you know, we're kind of on the edge where people, you know, starvation's a real thing, you know. And so I think the pressure on the government to kind of open things up was there. And there has been cooperation in terms of that, I think. I mean, but so far it's been so good. But my friend's a doctor and she just actually sent me a text message saying the numbers today are going up, which is so crazy because I was like, how am I going to get an update of what, you know, for this podcast? And so it is, I mean, I think it's very prevalent still. And I think the precarious balance between the social and economic consequences versus the death is something. And I'm not envious of those people that are in that position, but we still always, we wear masks everywhere we go. So it's still present, but the economic situation is a big deal in South Africa.
Mm. Andy, you and I think perhaps, I don't know, I'm not going to speak for you, but certainly for me listening to both Jay and being aware of the fact that COVID has come, but also in the context of volcanoes and typhoons and all of these crises that have been occurring and Tamsin talking about being on the precipice of humanitarian crisis, kind of feels a bit sheltered here in Australia, doesn't it?
To a degree.
I can say that though. I wasn't in hard lockdown. You were.
Well, yeah, the lockdown, that was strange. And prior to that, of course, as you were in the thick of over Christmas and New Year's before the virus hit, we had the terrible bushfires. So it was a bit of a double whammy in Australia in that way where I was just thinking recently that I went up to Queensland to see some friends of mine in September last year, and the flight back, I started to see the first front of a bushfire in just south of Noosa. So that was September last year. That kind of went through to about January, February. And then, of course, that overlapped with COVID. So now things are better. It kind of feels normal for the first time since quite some time ago. But yeah, so that it's been a strange experience. It's not as bad as typhoons or humanitarian catastrophes. It's been interesting here, I think, because I think some other countries measure themselves against, I can't speak for them, but maybe measure themselves against, say, America or Europe in terms of COVID numbers. We seem to have measured ourselves against New Zealand, which makes it seem within our little bubble worse than it actually is in the grand scheme of things. So while things did get a little bad and a little weird, it's certainly, when you look at the rest of the world, it was something to be concerned about, but something to not really get too troubled about.
Yeah, I think that was a really important. I needed to do that at times during the year to actually look at the global figures to remind myself that we were actually doing okay in terms of, you know, hospitalizations and in terms of deaths, you know, whilst obviously, you know, hugely impactful for those people who were, you know, who did have deaths and in so many other ways, like all those people who couldn't make it to family funerals, who, you know, even, well, you can talk to what it was like. What was it like in Melbourne being restricted to an hour's access to the outdoors?
That was kind of strange. It was funny with Jay and Tamsin talking about March 15 and that being a coincidental date for them. For me, it was, I didn't really start to really feel anything until March 16, which I think was St. Patrick's Day. I was in a pub with a mate of mine and it was St. Patrick's Day and it was on Chapel Street, which is a bustling hive of activity, particularly of social activity. And it was really, really quiet. And it was the first time that I thought, ooh, there's probably, yeah, this is a little bit of a problem. And then, of course, 3 or 4 days after that, the Grand Prix was closed down and there was a little bit of talk about, oh, you know, over other countries, there's been rushes on the supermarkets. We should probably go and get stuff. And, of course, you know, that's exactly the psychology that causes the rush on the supermarkets in the first place. But so, yeah, within a couple of weeks, the supermarkets were empty. That was a particularly worrying thing for me because I think it comes down to something deeper in your mind where you at least, we know that, you know, there's going to be food in the supermarket. You can go to the supermarket and get your food. And then suddenly the supermarket was empty. It was like, where am I going to eat? So that was a little bit of a worry. Restrictions, our first restrictions weren't as bad as, weren't as severe as our second ones. But the first ones were, yeah, we were kind of all locked down in place and that wasn't a uniquely Melbourne thing. I think everybody in Australia kind of in one way or another was really impacted. The second lockdown for us was a little bit, was quite a bit more stringent and more protracted. We had, I think it was around, oh, now was it June, July? Our numbers started to really spike. There were a couple of mishaps. Yeah, a couple of mishaps in public policy from both state and federal governments that caused, from a couple of different angles, numbers to spike in Melbourne. So we went to 700 new cases a day there for a little while, which for Australia was much, much worse than anywhere else. So then we went into a hard lockdown. I think it was supposed to be for maybe 6 weeks and it ended up being quite a lot longer. So there were only 4 reasons to leave. One was, oh, goodness me, I don't even remember now.
I think it was, what was it? It was
a supermarket.
Oh, well, actually, yeah, in hard lockdown, you could go to the supermarket, the chemist, couldn't you? And that was about it.
Yeah.
Work if you had to, so essential workers.
And then caregiving was one. School, work, supermarket, caregiving. And there was an hour of exercise permitted. I had already, like, I love to run. But I had a personal trainer that I hadn't worked with for many years who went virtual and I thought, okay, well, I'll do that. So I slowed down the running and sort of did most of my exercise indoors. So I didn't really take advantage of the outdoor exercise so much, except for maybe the odd walk around the block for my sanity. But it kind of got really quiet really fast on Chapel Street, being the big buzzing street that it was. And we had a curfew as well, which is something that most of Australia didn't. So we had a curfew from 8 p.m. until 5 a.m. That was part of the 4 reasons that you were allowed to leave the house. And even that was only within the confines of the curfew. So seeing the enforcement of the curfew and masks was a little disquieting. I remember seeing one silly bloke on the street without a mask, and he was surrounded by four or five cops, and he was freaking out, and the cops were trying to calm him down. And I just thought, this is getting quite a lot out of hand. So, yeah, a couple of little isolated things like that where you go, this just seems a little dystopian. And I know it's only for now, but oh, boy.
Yeah. That second lockdown in Victoria, and particularly for Melbourne, where it was at its most strict anywhere in the country, one of the things that I was conscious of, and I wasn't, you know, we weren't holding to exactly that same level of severity in terms of the lockdown in regional Victoria, but one of the things that started to become quite obvious was a bit of disparity between what was going on in Victoria, what was going on in the rest of the country, because the first lockdown, sort of everyone was in it together. So the conversations, the things you saw on social media, it was all like, oh yeah, we're all in this, and you know, everybody be kind and everybody look after yourselves, et cetera, et cetera. And then it was like the rest of the country kind of just got back to some semblance of normal while things got tougher in Victoria. And that started to feel, I know for me, a little uncomfortable. I felt like saying to people, can you just leave your pictures of your trips to the beach and you're catching up at the pub and all the other things that you're doing? Can you just hold off on that a bit? Was that the experience for you too?
I did find, yeah, in the second lockdown, certainly I did feel like Melbourne was psychologically isolated from the rest of the country and the rest of can't speak for the rest of the world. But yeah, exactly as you say, lockdown one, we're all in it together. Lockdown two, just in Melbourne, was like, oh, what did Melbourne do? You know, it was kind of, we were the naughty kid. And there were a couple of memes going around, people saying kind of things that I thought, well, I'm not going to say anything, but do you really need to say that? As far as photos and like holiday photos and all that, I kind of live vicariously through those photos. It was kind of like my little, an old high school mate of mine took his kids to some little motor inn in Dubbo, which is a small town in rural New South Wales that wouldn't exactly be an excitement central, but it was like, oh, that's lovely, they're out in the pool. I kind of really enjoyed seeing other people do that, and I think for me that was a little bit of a balm for me to get on Instagram. And I'm not on Facebook because, you know, I don't like applying sandpaper to my will to live. But when it comes to Instagram, yeah, just the photos and just seeing what people are doing, that I found that to be a real healing thing for me, and something that sort of helped me feel like life is going on even if I can't really participate right now.
Yeah, okay. So that, yes, that does make some sense. And perhaps it was some mixed feelings. I'm trying to cast my mind back to, I think probably, yes, living through others was nice. Maybe it was for me, I think, people who would send me messages saying, you know, because so many of my friends in contacts in particular in Sydney, having lived there for a long time myself, people saying, oh, we feel so bad for you. We feel so sorry for you. We feel, and it was sort of like, I don't feel sorry for us. Just, I don't know, have some empathy, you know, imagine what it must be like to be here. Or I don't know, it was a strange, strange time. And I really noticed that difference between that first lockdown and the second, that there was a much greater sense of, and maybe there was a bit of novelty the first time around that had well and truly worn off later in the year.
Yeah, I felt pitied a little bit, but really for me, the biggest trouble for me in my mind was something that wasn't unique to Melbourne. Anybody who's lived in a city different to where they grew up or where their loved ones are, the anxiety for me was, have I hugged my loved ones for the last time? And that's not a uniquely Melbourne thing. Anybody who couldn't get to somewhere would have probably felt that sort of anxiety. So while things looked different in Melbourne, I think some of the biggest troubles, at least for me, were ones that were universal.
Yeah, that's such a good point. There's been so many people who have been and continue to be disconnected from family, you know, as a result of, well, in Australia we had the local borders, the domestic borders, and obviously international borders for everybody have been an issue and continue to be an issue. And just that uncertainty. I have a girlfriend who's just arrived back after many years working and living with her family in Abu Dhabi, and they've just arrived back in Australia this week, 2 days ago, I think, and so are now in quarantine for the 2 weeks in a tiny apartment.
14 days.
Yeah, in Sydney for 14 days. And even that is a whole other, you know, I was kind of reflecting on that and thinking, goodness, would I even want to come back if I then had to spend 14 days locked in an apartment? But then, of course, you know, for those in Melbourne, you've essentially been there and done that for a much longer period than 14 days. And maybe it's better to be in Australia at this point for those who for whom it means, you know, coming back and connecting with family, even if that's a long slog. And you mentioned running before and then personal trainer and being able to do that exercise at home. What else have you done to keep yourself, I guess, sane? What's self-care? Self-care's been a big theme here at Potential Psychology for this year. What have you done in terms of self-care to manage some of the challenges for 2020?
I've kind of been fortunate, well, partly because working on, you know, a podcast in the psychological space like this, I am more mindful of my mind. I know the word, metacognitive.
Yes.
I learned it on the podcast, I must tell you about. But I've ended up forming a little list of rules for myself just to keep myself on the level, because in the early days, like I used to wake up to the radio all the time in Australia, listen to the ABC radio, but I found that the news was giving me a knot in my stomach before I even got out of bed. And that was the reason why I quit Facebook a while ago. Jay, you were the same?
Yes.
Yeah, she's putting her hand up for our listeners. Jay's just putting her hand up and saying, me too.
Yeah. But I'd roll over and get my phone. Before I even gotten out of bed, I was reading Facebook and thinking, what's going on with the world? So I quit that, and I found that I was feeling the same about the radio. So I built a couple of playlists in Spotify, and I would wake up to them, and it was just all very mellow music, like, you know, Brian Eno. And I'd got my retrospective from Spotify the other day, and my number one artist was Sade, which being a metal fan in other years was a little bit of a surprise.
Clue to how old you are.
Yes, exactly, yeah. But I wrote down, actually, just for my Canadian friends in lockdown, I sort of wrote down a little list of a few things that had helped me. So that sort of disengaging with the media, no social media in bed. I didn't read the news before midday because my brain takes a while to wake up and I didn't want to freak it out with what was going on, and clicking away from any conflict online of any kind. And I still try to do that because, you know, I'm not going to change minds. I don't need to get involved and get the knot back in my stomach. So I pulled the pin on that. And then I turned all phone notifications off, even my ringtone. People are okay to leave a message. I don't need to be by the phone all the time, or, you know, particularly with the bushfires and then going into COVID, my phone became something that was a pain point, because I'd look at the phone and I'd go, oh, what's wrong now? You know, I'd get a news flash of, you know, how the numbers were in COVID or what the evacuations were like on the beach, or, you know, all sorts of different things that happened. So I turned off the phone, and I just sort of remembered that this is just for now. I've got to suck it up right now. It's kind of weird and sucky, but it's not going to be forever. And I just had to remember that, looking after myself, keeping my head about me. I picked up a book on stoicism, and I thought I'd read it, and I didn't, because I'm a rubbish reader. But I did find one point was, keep your head about you so that, you know, whatever happens, you'll have your head. And I thought, I'm going to work on that. And I've kind of have, and it's been something that's helped me.
Fantastic. And probably some really good strategies there for all of life, not just during a global pandemic, in terms of keeping ourselves calm and mindful and present and perhaps not as busy as we all think we need to be, being in the moment. And that stepping back and having perspective, which I love, that idea of, you know, this isn't forever, this is just for now, and things will change. And that's a good thing. I just need to concentrate on, you know, what's happening for me in the moment.
Yeah.
Thank you, Andy Tamsin. What have you been doing to keep yourself well this year?
Yeah, I'll start by just piggybacking a lot of what Andy said, a lot of what he said, I've done as well, you know, whether it's been conscious or just out of a necessity. I do believe that if anything really bad happens, someone will tell us. That I've always had that approach, and I haven't watched TV, haven't had a TV for years, and just not participating in that. So sort of not to repeat all of that, I would say that my approach to everything is just about, this is the quote that I live by a lot, which is, peace is the cessation of againstness, which sounds really kind of too many negatives in there, but it's the cessation of againstness. So I think what Andy mentioned, like moving away from anything that's polarizing, because I find it hard not to look at what's going on a big level and seeing the waging war between good and evil. And when you think of Star Wars and all of those movies and everything we see, it's like, it almost feels like that is the way, that's what, how I see this. It's like, it's being waged on a big, big level. And it doesn't actually matter whether it's black or white or blue or green or up or down. And I'm not even going to mention a word, because I'm sure you get it, because you just mention a word and you know you already feel polarized. So it's it's just whenever I feel that or see that out there in the world, I just come back to the cessation of againstness, and I see againstness as polarizing. So just to really find that place of love, really, I think is the peace, is the cessation of againstness. So whenever I feel pulled into againstness, it's just, okay, what can I learn? So it's really, it's been a journey of introversion and not being able to rely on media. And I'm a very obedient person. Like when I talk about my childhood and everything, I'm very obedient. I love doing good. I love doing things. I love positive reinforcement. So it's been a huge thing to kind of move away from the exterior giving me guidance, like the media. I always trusted the media. You know, what do you mean that I can't read an article online or anywhere and it not be truth? You know, that movie Social Dilemma really changed my consciousness. So I've really moved into finding my own guidance, developing my intuition, and moving into finding the peace in every moment. So when I see disparity or wanting to get involved, I just send light, prayer. I mean, maybe it's, what's the opposite of potent? I was going to say impotent, but I don't think that's the right word.
It is technically, but
yeah. But it's like, some people probably don't think that's potent, but I think there's enough of a movement. I really believe in that global movement of all holding a higher consciousness and not lowering ourselves into the negativity of againstness.
Mm.
And it is a challenge. And I mean, when I was reflecting on this podcast, probably the lowest point that I had in this whole time was just this real sense of hopelessness. You know, one of those middle of the night hopelessness. And I actually had, I was an expert business speaker at an online conference at 4 a.m. So I had to wake up at 4 a.m. to do that. And I was literally crying in the night and I couldn't get myself out of it. And I just thought, you know what? There's going to be 7 people or 11 people at this business event that I'm going to be presenting at that need help with their online business, and just focus on the one person you can help today. And that was a huge, huge breakthrough for me personally. I think it's almost like a lifetime breakthrough on that, but that's really what it was. And that's another thing that's kept me sane, is I've got my lovely pocket of clients who are all doing amazing things in the world. And there's so much amazing stuff going on, and I'm just focusing on that. And whether the big tidal wave of blackness is going to come and get me, at least I'm going to die happy. You know what I mean? I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like the doom and gloom. It's like, what's real? We don't even know what's real. So I'm just focusing on what I want to create more joy and productivity. And if I can create a little, you know, support people around me in big ways or small ways, you know, that's what I'm focusing on. Yeah.
Having those positive ripple effects, which is something we talk about a lot here at Potential Psychology. How can you have positive ripple effects on people around you? And those ripples do get bigger and bigger, but you start where you are. I love that. It's an Arthur Ashe quote that I use a lot. Start where you are, use what you have, do what you can. So it just brings it back to that. What can I do right now here with me, with the tools that I've got to hand in this moment that can make a difference? Because that's where we feel a sense of, well, it is a sense of potency, really. It's a sense of being able to actually make a difference rather than getting caught up in all of that kind of bigger stuff at that higher plane where our brains often want to go, but we don't necessarily have the power or control to do anything. And that can leave us into that kind of sense of helplessness and hopelessness. So yeah, I think that's a lovely philosophy to have. And I love the idea of being for things and not against things as well. I think that's a message that probably a lot of us could be reminded of, especially if you do go down the dark Twitter channel sometimes and you're reminded of how many people get caught up in the being against everything and how unhelpful That is so, that's beautiful. Thank you, Tams. And Jay, what is it that you have been doing to keep yourself, other than all your puppies? I mean, obviously dogs are enormously, dogs and cats, I have to say. I know Andy's got a house full of cats, haven't you?
Yes, they've been great to sort of pull me back into the present world when my mind starts to wander.
Indeed, indeed. And Jay has all the puppies. What else do you do aside from care for puppies and care for others?
Like Andy, I also have rules for myself, just three. You do something you have to do something you want to do, and then do something for others. So that's mainly how my days work for self-care. So if you do something you have to do that takes care of work and chores and like forcing yourself to get some exercise, I took boxing classes in the start of September.
Excellent.
And then you do something and you want to do, that's for you. So that's for me, it's pets and plants and binge watching or learning to do DIY everything, like your own ramen broth or making bread, starting your own herb garden. And then the last bit is what actually keeps me sane, because it's something that's beyond myself. You're part of something bigger than yourself. That's to do something for others. And you all know this. I have been collecting donations and cooking meals and packing food and getting old blankets and pillows and clothes from my friends who are doing Marie Kondo spring cleaning. Like, if it doesn't give you joy, just give it to me and it'll give joy to others. Just, I'm going to take that old stuff and all of your old stuff and your old toys, and it'll bring joy to someone else. And then we send that out to our relief distribution sites.
And that has been such a wonderful theme. And that has brought me joy just watching you doing that work over the course of the year, Jay, and knowing that you are giving your time and your energy and your weekends to do so much for others.
And thank you for your support. I have just recently realized that one of my least favorite tasks is peeling boiled eggs. We had to do like 400 of them in one night. So I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's for someone else next time.
Someone else can do that. But I think you make such a wonderful point there. And I know it's something that we have discussed here on the show around that a sense of meaning and purpose that comes from doing things, serving something that's larger than yourself, and how important that is for our self-care and our well-being and our emotional resilience. And sometimes just to pull us out of the funk that, you know, day-to-day life can bring, particularly when things have been tough and challenging and difficult. So that those three little rules that you've got for self are just delightful, and I think can be really, really helpful for all of us. An excellent reminder as we move into the end of this year and into the beginning of 2021 and a brand new fresh year, thinking about, you know, how we can live life in a way that serves others and therefore brings us joy and a sense of well-being and, you know, emotional connection, all of those things that we talk a lot about here. Thank you all so much for your thoughts. It's just delightful not only to have us all here in the one space, but to hear all of your insights and the things that you've shared and the things that you've learned and the things that I know will be of interest and of benefit to our listeners. It's joyful to know and serendipitous, I think, somehow that we have formed a team here who have perhaps similar values and similar thoughts and similar ways of interacting in the world. It's really, really joyful for me to be able to not only acknowledge that, but to share it with a larger audience, because you've all made such a huge difference to my experience of day-to-day, not just this year, but in all the years that we've been working together. Have we got a final Christmas or holiday wish for our audience? Jay, would you like to go first?
Yes. I know that we take this greeting for granted in the past, but I wish you all good health. And may the holidays be filled with love, light, and laughter for you and your family.
glorious and such a good reminder about how we do take health for granted. Tamsin.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to say thank you because I look forward to our next year because now we all kind of know each other on a whole new level. So thank you for this. It's been so wonderful getting to know everybody. And it is, I think, testimony to you that you've gathered us and we are all so similar. And I do love online business and how the world's shrinks, you know, and here we are. So yeah, I mean, I guess for you each, or the three of you, and for the listeners, the wish would be that you have the strength and fortitude to make the right choices every day, to get up every day. Not that sounds so depressing, but it's like I know next year is going to be, this year has been a huge turmoil, like the sediment turning, and I think it's going to be a better world once we're through this, definitely. So to just hold out for that and just enjoy every day and, yeah, cherish your family, you know, cherish your friends, family, and the people that you're with.
Gorgeous and so optimistic. Thank you, Tamsin. In a positively optimistic way, not in an unrealistic way. Yes, yes. And Andy?
Well, firstly, to potential psychology podcast listeners, I've got to really thank you very deeply because I have personally this year and always, I've gotten something good out of every episode that I've made of this podcast. And now I've gotten to meet my workmates face to face. And it's been wonderful working with this team on this project. And it couldn't happen if we didn't have listeners. So I'm really, really grateful and just want to express that to you personally. And for Christmas, I'd love to wish you health and happiness. I do realize that some people in some parts of the world might find happiness a little bit of a stretch at the moment. I hope you don't feel under any pressure to feel joy if you're not feeling it, but I hope the light gets in there somewhere for you. And I wish you hope. I wish that you can have the optimism that today will be better. Having seen Melbourne in the last 6 months go from a rather dark place to now where we have had zero COVID cases in the entire state for 40 days, healing and health is possible, even if it looks unlikely right now. And I'm certain that better days are ahead of us. So I wish you health, happiness, and the other H is hope. So a bright and healthy 2021 to you.
And a perfect note to finish on. Thank you. Thank you all for being here, for speaking. I know sometimes it's a bit uncomfortable coming out from behind the scenes to be in front. Well, we do have a camera, although nobody else is seeing that, but certainly hearing us all today. I absolutely value your contribution and the joy that you bring to my days. I can get a bit stuck in my own head and forget to have the conversations, but every time I do with each of you, whether that's over email or face-to-face or, well, it's mostly over Zoom, isn't it, realistically, you know, those moments bring me joy and it makes a huge difference. And I'm so pleased and proud to be able to share a little of your worlds, your thoughts, your philosophies, your values, and the way that you interact with the world in such a positive way with our audience. So thank you. And to our listeners, I don't think I can really add anything that Jay and Tamsin and Andy haven't already said. Be safe, be well, take each moment one at a time, engage in them in a way that is playful and caring and sometimes just chilled. Do what you need to do to stay in a happy and healthy and as positive a place as you can. And as I always say, do what you can, even in small ways, to fulfill your potential. And we'll see you in 2021. Thank you so much for listening in and for celebrating the amazing people who helped me to bring the Potential Psychology podcast to you throughout the year. They're pretty special people, aren't they? Thoughtful, kind, smart, extraordinarily helpful, I have to say. I really have loved working with them for not just 2020, but all the years that I have been working with them in some cases. And thank you for listening in and for supporting us all year and each year. We're really excited about what 2021 has in store, knowing, of course, that could be anything. But what I do know is that come hell or high water, there'll be plenty of new episodes of the podcast with great guests and plenty of practical advice for helping you to live your best life and fulfill your potential, as well as occasionally nutting your way through some of life's trickier challenges. We're also launching a series of new projects and products in 2021, including the Thriving Leaders Toolkit, which is an online program for building your leadership confidence, understanding others' behavior in order to bring out their best, and maximizing your positive ripple effect to build a better, brighter, happier team, workplace, or organization and world. Big, ambitious goals and plans there. If you're keen to get a sneak peek into this, you can download my free how-to guide for creating thriving teams on the Potential Psychology website, which is potential.com.au. And there you can also find out a little bit more about the Potential Psychology team. There's some photos there. There's some bios. You can share in just how extraordinary they are. So until I speak to you again, which will only be in a few weeks' time, on the other side of Christmas and the new year, we'll have the launch of season 10 of the podcast with new interviews, new topics, and new guests. I wish you a restful and rejuvenating break. Celebrate the end of 2020 and the new opportunities that a new year brings. Stay safe and go well, and I'll see you soon.